Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I'm Maria Bartiromo.
I'm Greg Gutfeld.
I'm Tammy Bruce, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Friday, May 27th, 2022. I'm Alex Hogan. As Russia steadily advances in eastern Ukraine in the latest military movements of the war,
they probably will take a tactical retreat and pull their troops out and back towards the west and cede that territory to the Russians.
This is the Fox News Rundown, War on Ukraine.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says the attacks in the Donbass are clear examples of genocide. Russian troops continue to intensify bombings in the east and are reportedly gearing up a third line of defense to protect taken territory.
So there are two wars going on here. There's the war over the map, which is where are the Russian troops, where are the Ukrainian troops?
This is Dr. Matthew Schmidt, Associate Professor of National Security, Political Science, and Russia expert from the University of New Haven.
Who's taking what land? What color are we coloring it in when we look at, you know, TV graphics? And then there's the war over combat effectiveness, which is how many units are we making combat ineffective by drawing them into a fight in say, Severodonetsk. So that's really why that's important. There are tactical reasons about where rivers are and things like this. The Ukraine, essentially, if you look at a map, the Russians are trying to envelop it. Use a classic sort of pincer movement. If you know World War II, the Battle of the Bulge, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. That's essentially what this is. And the Ukrainians are trying to hold on to the city and trying to push that bulge deeper into Russian territory in order to sort of split it. What's really going on is that the Russians have thrown everything they have into this fight because they have not been able to be successful in their other axes of attack in the Donbass. In this spot, in this salient, they are being successful. They probably will take the city and some other cities and close it. There's loss, though. They're losing a lot of equipment. They're losing a lot of men. At the same time, the Ukrainians are taking probably the biggest losses of the war. We don't actually know what those losses are. The Ukrainians have been very closed about that. And at the same time, American intelligence, which knows what those answers are, has been supporting mm-hmm. its ally by not releasing those numbers. But what we can glean from Zelensky's recent statements is that they're taking losses. And I would expect that they probably will take a tactical retreat and pull their troops out and back towards the west and cede that territory to the Russians. So that when this particular engagement is over, you're likely to have two forces that are essentially exhausted, neither of whom that will be able to engage in large-scale offensive maneuver anytime soon. You will continue to see over the course of the summer tactical offensive moves and, you know, wins and losses on that level. But I think the big muscle movements, the big, you know, combat arm maneuver stuff, combined arms maneuver, is going to end for a while.
So and that's something war, that we've heard yeah. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky repeatedly say, that they will not give up any territory. They're not going to make any concessions. And you disagree with that. You think that inevitably some land will be taken away and territory is going to be lost? Or do you see this more as a temporary issue yeah. that we'll see in the weeks and maybe months ahead?
It's temporary. So a tactical retreat is just what it sounds like. It says, mm-hmm. at this moment in time, we can't hold this piece of land without unreasonable losses. So we are going to make the tactical decision, this decision in this moment of time, to retreat in order to save personnel, in order to save equipment. But we are not agreeing to cede this land to the Russians. Somewhere down the line, 2 months, 3 months, a year, we fully plan to come back and own this territory.
Yeah, and especially in the east, within the last couple of days, we've seen that Russian troops have made some small and steady gains, but it's not necessarily the speed at which they predicted or expected. Mm-hmm. They have been saying that they're not chasing any deadlines here. So do you believe that, or do you think this is just a deflection?
I think it's hard to believe anything the Russians are saying, and it's really hard to know. So you would have to say, you know, what deadline, right? So mm-hmm. a few weeks ago, we were all talking about May 9th. Oh, the Russians are going to do this. They need a big win, you know, on May 9th. It turns out they didn't really get one, right? And they didn't really seem to try for one. They had decided.
Yeah. And again, just for clarity, May 9th was the victory day when people were expecting to have this big speech come out. And we really just did not see that come to fruition.
Yeah. And so I don't know what the deadline would be. I mean, maybe internally, you know, President Putin is saying, here's the deadline. You have to do this for X, Y, and Z reasons, but we just don't know. And the big takeaway I would leave with on all of this is that the war is now about forced generation. In order to continue major combined arms maneuver on both sides have to generate more forces. And there's two parts to that. One is they just need numbers, right? Yeah. The Russians have to have more bodies in play in combat. The Ukrainians do too. But the second one is even more important, which is they have to have combat effectiveness. Right? These are like basketball teams. You can have two basketball teams with five players each and all the guys on the bench and reserve and, you know, all the tools and coaching. But one team is going to play better than the other. It's going to be more combat effective on that court for reasons of morale, for reasons of training. Yeah. And what's going on right now is a fight to develop enough units with combat effectiveness. And the Russians are really struggling with that because they've lost a lot of men, not just men, but they've lost a lot of leadership. And in the Russian military culture, that really hurts their capacity to plan an offensive operation. That is, they don't have a lot of people that are very good at saying, we're going to cross the river down here and we're going to have, you know, air cover here or use a drone over here. That's complicated. It's the kind of thing it takes years to train people at in professional military schools, and the Russians don't do it down the line. And so they've lost a lot of that capacity, which means it's easier for them to sit on the defense than to go on the offense. The Ukrainians, on the other hand, have seemed to be very good in this whole war at finding creative ways to go on the offense. But what they need is weapons. And what they need right now is what Zelensky asked for, were these multiple launch rocket systems. They need long range fires.
We've been speaking to Dr. Matthew Schmidt, Associate Professor of National Security, Political Science, and Russia expert from the University of New Haven. More coming up after this.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
And one thing that I do think is interesting also about the manpower and the forces that we're looking at in this war of people who are willing to enlist and wanting to fight. When I was in Lviv, there were so many men who were walking around that people that I met who said they wanted to join, but they simply couldn't because there was no need at this point. There weren't enough resources to train enough people. Do you think that Russia is seeing a similar issue with not having enough forces, but not having the means to train them, or simply just not having those resources to tap into?
So they have the means to train. The question is how fast can they do it? And an interesting thing is that Putin just signed into law an exemption to the conscription laws, allowing older people to enlist, right? 40-year-olds and even older to enlist. But why is he doing that? He's trying to get men who had combat experience 20 years ago in Chechnya,
who would be easier to train into combat effectiveness to get them faster into the field in Ukraine. But what that's telling you is, right, the whole planning for this war at the beginning was insufficient, right? It didn't think these things through in a long-term way, and now they're trying to bootstrap themselves into a position where they can go on the offensive in the next 60 or 90 days.
Yeah, and speaking of offensive, so much of this war has been looking at the types of regions that Russia is attempting to cut off in order to separate Ukraine either from its own territories internally, from the Black Sea has been a major area they have been looking at. Do you think at this point, cutting off Ukraine from the Black Sea is realistic for Russian forces?
I think it is, mostly because Ukraine doesn't have a navy to compete with. So it's doing the best that it can with it, you know, with its homemade anti-ship missiles and these kinds of things, or holding on to Snake Island. But in the end, Russia's got a navy and Ukraine doesn't.
Mm-hmm. And there have been so many attempts that we've seen in the last several months of trying to put pressure on Russia to get them to pull out of Ukraine. And it's really impacting private citizens on a very personal level, from the economy to, let's say, looking at athletes who've been banned from their sports. So there is some division into that as to whether or not this is right or wrong. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think if you look at sanctions, for instance, we've ignored a fundamental fact. The idea is that you have people with a lot of money, and if you impose sanctions, they lose a lot of money. And when they lose too much money, they go to President Putin and they say, we want you to change policy in Ukraine. And we forget about that last part, that all of the first parts can happen, but they still may not be willing to go talk to Putin, either because they believe in the war and the idea of manifest destiny that Putin is putting out there as a rationale, or they're afraid that they'll or their families will be assassinated, as we know Putin does. So that it doesn't necessarily follow that just because sanctions work or just because banning an athlete works, it will cause a change in policy. And I think we make a big mistake, and we really misunderstand the way Russia works when we assume that. It's not like the United States. It's not like a lobbying operation in the U.S.
Yeah, exactly. And whether or not people are willing, have the courage to go to him, or even have the contacts and resources to speak with Putin. And it's interesting, one aspect of this that came out, it's not just international sporting organizations that are cutting off and banning athletes. Even things like the International Federation of Cats announced that Russian-bred cats can no longer be imported. They cannot be registered to any pedigree books, and they can't enter competitions outside of the country.
Yeah, I think a lot of this really goes against what we stand for in the West, right? We don't believe in collective punishment. We have court systems, and we say, if you're accused of a crime, there has to be evidence, and you have a right to a defense. And we're going to go through this due process to work this out. And when we just ban, you know, Medvedev from Wimbledon, we're not looking at him as an individual, which is how we would look at people in the West. We're looking at him as a collective part of a country that he didn't, you know, have any control of being born in or not. I think it's different with things like the Olympics, but in these cases of the cats, I mean, I just think this is ridiculous, and it's sort of virtue signaling by a lot of these organizations.
And another thing that came out of this in the last couple of days, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, so he announced that there's this new joint effort with the U.K. and the EU to document Russian war crimes in Ukraine. As far as this goes, do you think that will make any difference?
I don't think it makes any difference in the course of the war or on Putin's decision making. He has rationales, right, for why he does these things, and he does not consider them crimes. He has a theory of what war is that these fit into. But it's critically important for the future, right? Someday, this is going to end, and it's going to end in the streets of Moscow, and someday the Russian people will have to decide to withdraw their consent from Putin and people like him. And whoever comes after, right, has to understand the truth of what happened, has to take responsibility, like Nazi Germany did, to for these crimes, and be real bit rehabilitated and rehabilitate society in that way with some kind of, you know, truth and reconciliation process. And gathering this evidence is critically important to it. It's the first step.
Dr. Matthew Schmidt, Associate Professor of National Security, Political Science, and Russia expert from the University of New Haven. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.